T.D. Erlin, what is your favorite podcast on Inside Lacrosse?
D-Fly and Dixie, hands down.
To you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland, worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast featuring Inside Lacrosse, Big Ten Network, and ESPN analyst and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. If you're new to the podcast, Dixie and I went to college back at Johns Hopkins in the early 90s. We've been friends ever since. He's a former Blue Jay midfielder. He's also a college referee. College official, but you probably know him from his TV work or his Inside Lacrosse work. We'll be bringing you the weekend preview podcast this year, and we're really excited about it. So, Dix, let's get it. Welcome to another season of College Lacrosse, Mark Dixon.
We're back.
What's up, buddy?
In fact, should we do the selfie video, the Tom Brady Gronk? Just mocking the fans after the AFC Championship game and then after the Super Bowl that they're, you know, what they did. I know they did the, what was it, the Puff Daddy and the All-Stars. Like, burr, 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 burr. We ain't going nowhere. That was the AFC Championship game. And then it was an Eminem song after the Super Bowl.
Did you see Gronk, any highlights of Gronk at the parade?
I did. Very inappropriate behavior by Gronk.
He's fantastic.
He's something else.
He's an animal.
Yeah, he is. He's something else. He's only 30 years old.
He's talking about retiring.
Yeah, I think he should.
Yeah, he's getting.
He looked good in the Super Bowl, but
that's the best he looked maybe this season.
Yeah, yeah. But anyhow, we are back. Excited to be back. Kind of hard to believe it's a new season, and this is actually. So yeah, we're in a new time slot.
Yeah.
When you called me a few weeks ago and told me about the changes here, because in television, like the death sentence is getting sent to Friday night in prime time because. Yeah. So when you're like, hey, we're moving to Friday, I'm like, wait a second. Hold on now. And then you explain that.
Getting the Charles in charge treatment.
Charles in charge. More like NCIS Toledo, something like that, getting sent to the television graveyard. But no, it's good. We're excited to be doing, what was this called before? The preview, the weekend preview
The weekend preview. We were in the middle of the week.
Yeah.
And that's why we were able to fill some of the time between the games with a little bit more of our banter.
Right.
But we'll have to be on point a little bit more.
Yeah.
But we got to give the people what they like. We brought it a little more entertaining.
A little more off color. Not as serious. Not as, you know, we don't take ourselves too seriously like some other folks.
We were the podcast that talked about lacrosse the least.
Right on.
But
now we got to bring it because people are going to be, as we've been told by leadership here at IL, people will be listening to you on their way to the game. To get ready, to get primed, to get prepped, to be blown away by Division I lacrosse action.
And that's exciting, though, in its own right. So, Dix, you are a college official.
Yes.
And you watch a lot of college lacrosse. We have some new rules.
Mm-hmm.
And they were in effect for, obviously, the weekend zero is what we called it here at Inside Lacrosse for the first games of February 1st and February 2nd weekend. And there was some controversy already over the dive rule. Just set up in the Furman-Duke game, William Holcomb, attackman for Furman, attacks the goal from behind the cage. Duke goalkeeper Turner Upgren saw him coming, steps out to sort of take a charge like you would in basketball, and then some chaos ensued. What was the call that they made, and how did you interpret it?
So we're still wrapping our arms around the dive, which I have not been a fan of since they passed it. But in the particular instance that you're speaking of, there was a Furman attackman right around, or attacker, I don't know if he was a midi or attackman, Holcomb. But he was attacking from goal line extended. Defender was on his back. The angle that I saw, you couldn't tell if he was pushed or not. It looked like he wasn't. But Upgren, the Duke goaltender, went out to meet him and initiate contact. And anytime you make contact with the goaltender in the cylinder, in the crease, that is illegal. A lot of people are struggling with, well, he had 1 foot outside of the crease when he made contact, which is true.
The goalie did.
But remember, imagine a goalie has a ball and is looking to outlet it, 1 foot in the crease, 1 foot outside the crease. You make contact with the stick. That's interference. So he's still, with 1 foot in, is still technically in the crease and protected by the crease. So there's been a lot of discussion amongst my fellow officials. We actually, for Nailoa, have a call this week that is national in
and
scope.
Nailoa is the Intercollegiate
National
Lacrosse.
Intercollegiate Lacrosse Officials Association. Sure. I don't know what the exact terminology is, but we're like, you know, it's the governing body of officiating in the United States for men's lacrosse, all levels. And this is a call that, you know, it's a set call. I can't remember if it's biweekly or monthly, but it will be on a PRN as well, an as-needed basis to address issues. So I'm sure that these issues are going to come up. But here's the way I interpreted it. This is Mark Dixon's opinion, and it looked like a situation where, let's say there's no push, the guy dove toward the cage, but the goalie came out to initiate the contact, and then the contact was made, and he was out of that goal mouth area. And if you want to know what I'm talking about for goal mouth, go to InsideLacrosse.com. There was I think Matt Kinnear put up an article on some of the dive calls from this weekend, and he put up the image of what the goal mouth looks like. It's like the shape of an ice cream cone, the area immediately in front of the goal, the goal line where the goaltender would stand. He vacated that area, initiated contact. So by rule, yeah, you're supposed to get a minute penalty when you make contact with the goaltender, and it's supposed to be So let me backtrack, okay? If you dive into the goal mouth and you land in what they call the goal mouth and make no contact with the goaltender, it's still no goal, and it will be a one-minute foul, and it will be releasable.
What's the technical term for the call?
Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Unsportsmanlike conduct, okay.
Unsportsmanlike conduct is what it's called. So you, if you land in that goal mouth, it's a one-minute releasable, but if you make contact with the goaltender, it's to be a 1 to 3 minute non-releasable. You're supposed to take everything into consideration: intent, where did the player launch from, where did the player, what was the path to the goal, did he try to get away from the goal, was he going directly at the goaltender? The whole other can of worms that we haven't talked about yet is if you're taking the correct path, meaning diving away from the goal mouth, and you get hit in midair by a defender and that carries you into the goaltender, what does that mean? You know, the intent. So there's a lot of gray area out there right now. But for this play in particular, the Duke Furman game, if I had my druthers, and I had the advantage of watching this thing 25 times on replay, I've got no goal. I've got interference with the goaltender because you made contact with the goalie inside the crease. But I'm not so sure. And this is not the way the rule is written, but it's going to have to see how, you know, we're going to be adjudicating this thing. And if there's ARs, you know, alternative rule, is that a situation where it could be, okay, I got interference with the goalie, but I'm not taking you for a minute penalty. We're just calling it interference. Okay, because you hit the goaltender while he's in the crease, and let's take it out to the side and clear it. So in that situation, I call interference on white. All right, it's going to be blue ball, clearing it, no goal, and we restart. That's the consensus that, you know, I was talking to some of my fellow officials, but this is all off the record, not official, just conversation, what we do. So that's how I would have adjudicated it. But again, me and all the other officials have to do what we're told, and we have to follow the letter of the law. And by rule, that was kind of letter of the law right there. So,
but this wasn't the only instance this weekend where that was a factor in some of the games. So where else did you see it, and how did it play out?
Another interesting call was Lehigh versus New Jersey Institute of Technology. The game was at Lehigh. You had a Lehigh attacker, attack player, dive toward the crease, and the goal was disallowed, which I thought was the right call because the player did land in the goal mouth, right? What I didn't see from the clip, but what was kind of a footnote, was two fouls were administered on the play. So NGIT was in red, Lehigh was in white. What you had was a push on red, okay, and then you had unsportsmanlike conduct on white. And it was releasable because the player didn't make contact with the goaltender when he landed. That blew my mind that you had two fouls. Look, in the old rule, okay, when you had to have at least some part of your foot grounded, one foot, one toe, one toenail, one toe hair, whatever it was either a push or you were in the crease. So I'm struggling with, you know, okay, it was a push and a dive. So again, these are things we're going to hash out as officials. And, you know, speaking with people that were at that game, it was confusing to them. They said the referees did a really good job of explaining why they called it. It just, again, it just kind of flies in the face of convention. I don't know. It was strange.
So what you're saying is until we get some more game film on some of these actual calls to be made, it will be very subjective how individual officials, crews, call it each game.
Yeah, absolutely. And remember, this is a uniform rule. This is D1, D2, D3, JUCO. Everybody's using it. So, and the other thing is, you only had, what, 24 teams playing real games this past weekend? About?
Maybe not even.
Right around there?
Yeah.
So that's about 10, 12 games, you know? And
small sample size.
Small sample size, but a lot to talk about.
Yeah, so the other big rule change was the shot clock. And from your perspective, were there any issues with that in week one?
None.
Week zero, I should say.
As a matter of fact, the shot clock has been very well received. You know, from the standardization point of view, coaches know where they are at all times. The 20 seconds to clear has not been an issue. I did see some action this weekend where guys got it over the midfield line with more than 60 seconds left, and they got in trouble, and they threw it back over the line. So we've had about 3 weeks now of scrimmages in addition to some games last weekend, and there's been some hiccups with referees. You know, I know a buddy of mine did a preseason scrimmage, and the ball came over with like 65 seconds left in the shot clock, and they threw it over the midfield line, and they called back court, you know, over and back. But it wasn't, because as long as it's not at 60,
right. You're
good to go. So those are some hiccups that were worked out, but very minimal. I can tell you as an official, there's two instances where you just, overall, it feels great not having to hit your beeper, not having to communicate with your fellow officials. Okay, what do we got? What do you think? What are we doing here?
And how would you communicate that? Just through like eye contact, or?
Oh no, we verbally on the field. The three of us are yelling, like, you know, hey Dan, what do you got? What do you got? What do you got, Dan? You know, and the referee would be, the mechanic was, the referee would always put whoever the R was in the game would make the final decision about who would put the shot clock on. But there's two instances where I think the shot clock has helped out immensely in the action that I've seen over the last couple of weeks. One is when a player gets the defender hung up. As an official, you're like, okay, how long are we going to let this go? How long are we going to allow the offensive player to survey before we put the shot clock on? The other instance is when a team comes out in zone. Okay, when a team comes out in zone, you know, really, if a team is not defending, you know, is not engaging the offense from a defensive standpoint, the offense can't be accused of stalling. But we all know that when a team would go into zone, they would send one guy out to pressure the ball, and that would put the onus on the referees then to put the shot clock up. Now a team comes out in zone, who cares? We're just reffing. They're just playing, and we're just reffing. And so I think the shot clock has been very well received. I think the pace of play has been good, and it's been the shot clock is as troublesome as the dive has been. The shot clock is the exact opposite.
So, Dix, the first real weekend of the 2019 season starts with games on Friday night. Syracuse.
Well, let's not be unfair. I mean, there was a real games a week ago.
Sure, but
let's say the meat of the season begins, you know, in full swing.
Yeah,
and this coming weekend.
Last week there were some great games, but the only really sort of marquee game was the Penn State win over Villanova.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, a, you know, really interesting on fan, for fans. This weekend, there's some really good ones. So let's start with, let's get right into our weekend preview. Robert Morris at number 9, Penn State. Penn State, as I mentioned, had a good win last week. Looked very good against Villanova. Robert Morris upset these guys last year. What are your thoughts on this game?
So, you know, Robert Morris is one of those stories from a year ago that was just fantastic. They were able to win their NCAA play-in game, and then they gave the University of Maryland all they could handle in the first round of the NCAA tournament. That was a game that I was able to cover, and it was a good game. Maryland had to really put it together in the second half of that contest to come away with a W. This is a different situation. Robert Morris graduated a lot of players off of that team from a year ago. They do return Alex Hager, who I believe he was my preseason pick for first team All-American goaltender from Robert Morris. So I think he's outstanding. The trademark of Robert Morris was they were so long and just tall last year, and they have graduated a number of those players from that team. The other thing to keep in mind, and this is, you know, Robert Morris, again, had an amazing season. This is a Penn State group that was, when they lost to Villanova and then they lost to Robert Morris in the first 4 weeks of the season, they were trying to figure out how to play without Grant Amont. And also they had lost Nick Aponte to a graduation. So they were your two main playmakers that were gone. So they were still trying to figure things out at this time last year. And, you know, Penn State looks real good. It was kind of taken aback by people being like, oh, my God, Penn State, look how good they are. But everybody knew Penn State was going to be good this year. They ranked, what, ninth in the preseason? They're top 10 in everybody's poll. And, you know, it's no secret what they have in Happy Valley, especially with the return of Grant Amont. So this should be a really, really good game. Gerard Arcari was fantastic in the win against Villanova. Obviously, we've already talked about Grant Amont, 10 points. Mack O'Keefe is as sweet a shooter as you're going to find in the game. Dylan Folds has really come into his own. And you know, I think for Penn State, it's the question marks are on the defensive end of the field. You got Chris Sabia, an all-conference preseason pick, but they just really need to still gel as a unit. Colby Canese made 19 saves against Villanova, but this is a situation where they were able to control possession. You know, Gerard Arcari won, I think, 14 out of 16 faceoffs. However, this is the shot clock now. You know, this is not a situation where you can win 90% of your faceoffs and then you can control the game to the point where the other team doesn't enjoy possessions. The 80-second shot clock is making it that way a lot. The other thing is it was an incredibly high-scoring game. You know, 24 goals in a 60-minute game. Obviously, Penn State dominated, but Villanova was able to get a lot of touches in that game and therefore get a lot of shots off. So in any event, this should be a really good game. And, you know, I'm looking forward to see what Robert Morris looks like this year with the graduation of a lot of outstanding players. In particular, it was Mitch Whale, Zach Christensen, and Zach Bryant that were the guys last year. And it was like Jurassic Park watching them play defense. It really was.
Our next game is number 7 Johns Hopkins in their season opener at Towson, also their first game for the Tigers. That game is at noon on Saturday. Always a good neighborhood rivalry when these two teams get together. And Towson's played the Blue Jays very well the last several years.
Well, they beat them in 2017, if I'm not mistaken. And this is a Towson team that, you know, we'll talk to Sean Adelin later on in this podcast, but this is a team coming off a disappointing 7-8 season. They did make it to the CAA championship game of the conference tournament where they lost to UMass. But this is a Towson team that's hungry. And Sean Adelin publicly stated that in 2018, we did not play up to the standard of Towson lacrosse. So you fast forward, you rewind to a year ago, this was a Towson team that had lost Joe Sider and Ryan Drennan and Jack Adams and, you know, a host of really good players that made it to the national semifinals in 2017. And Hopkins was a team coming back with a lot of returners and took it to the Tigers. You know, this year, you know, you look at Hopkins, their known entities are on the attack and in the defense. Who's going to play midfield? You know, who's going to step up and produce in the midfield? And also, you say goodbye to Hunter Moreland at the faceoff dot. You got Kyle Prouty, who took some draws last year, but you're going against Alex Woodall, the big cat, who is a preseason All-American at the faceoff for Towson. So, you know, that's an area. But again, you know, the shot clock, you're not as – I'm not trying to lessen the importance of the faceoff, but you're not, you know, chewing your fingernails the way that you used to be if you didn't have that dominant faceoff guy or if the faceoff matchup was going to go 70-30, 80-20 in the other team's favor. You're not gnashing your teeth the way that you used to now that you have the shot clock. But this should be a great game. And you got Sean Nadalin against Dave Petromala, well-documented. Obviously, Coach Nadalin played for Dave Petromala at Homewood Field. And Sean Nadalin has made a commitment to Towson. Towson's made a commitment to him. He's been mentioned in the Princeton search a few years ago, the Michigan search and other high-profile coaching positions, and he's elected to stay at Towson. So he believes in that program. They believe in him, and it's going to be a good game.
Let's talk to Sean right now.
Coach Nadelin, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, and first off, thanks for having me on. It's exciting to, talk, about Towson and lacrosse in general with you guys.
I know you're excited to get started with this season. After graduating most of your starters from your 2017 team that won a third straight CAA title and advanced the championship weekend, you finished 7-8 last season. And you said that last year wasn't up to what you have set as the standard of Towson lacrosse. So what have you seen in the off season and this preseason to get you excited for 2019?
We're pumped about the 2019 season because we've been able to kind of turn the page from 18. Hopefully the nice thing is that we got a lot of cliff notes from the 18 season on what we need, what didn't go well, why it didn't go well, and how we can correct those situations and issues that we had and make our program better from it. 2018, and as far as record, yes, it was, it wasn't where we wanted it to be. Did we still play and compete for the CAA championship against UMass? Yes. So, as in regards to that, we were still in position to win another CAA title. And that just, I think, goes to the credit of our players and my staff to get these guys ready and the players to do as much as they can around all the distractions that we had to still compete, and then do as much as they can to be successful on game day. So I give them a lot of credit to just kind of to piece it all together and to get Towson lacrosse in that situation. I think the biggest piece of our, frustration and why I really feel like 2018 wasn't, a year at the standards of Towson lacrosse was all the off the field issues that we had. That was obviously something that we've addressed. Our seniors this year in 2019 have been terrific, being that they experienced it last year and, saw what type of leadership, worked and or didn't work and then understanding of how to really attack it this year and, be extremely positive, but also very accountable and make sure the team was on board with all that. It was really exciting to see our players from the summer all the way through the fall with our workouts and with practices and the intensity and competitiveness and just how much they really, the team bonded together. It's been a lot of fun to see happen.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about two of your seniors in particular, Zach Goodrich and Alex Woodall. And we'll start with Zach. First team All-American, as good as he is, it's still kind of rare to see a short stick defensive midfielder be named preseason player of the year for your conference this year. And he's been named captain three times. It's the first time in school history to see him. What does he mean to your program and to your team?
Zach Goodrich really is the epitome of Towson lacrosse.
Sure.
When we just Zach from day one has done everything to the best of his ability, and with that has come a great deal of leadership, has come a great deal of competitiveness, has come a great deal of mentorship within our program with the guys that he's been able to interact with and be a part of. He got to learn quite a bit from a pretty strong senior group in 2017 when he was only a sophomore, and he was alongside captains like Brian Bolowicki and Ryan Drenner and Jack Adams. So, that I think really helped him continue to use his skill set and tools and sharpen them around those guys with all that. So, Zach, anybody can see what he does on the field, and that was one of the probably, I don't know if strange is the word, but one of the more impressive things for me to experience as a coach was during Zach's freshman year, kind of being in practice and in watching scrimmage segments or half field or whatever drill was going on, and just being around the players on the side. And Zach was on the field doing something, and to hear their reaction and response and Just kind of the comments when he would make a play or when he would do something as a freshman coming from guys that, you know, were pretty high-level players for us is, you know, above them. You know, just to hear their response and then their reaction was something I never really experienced before as a coach from a freshman. And Zach, you know, has earned everything that he's been able to achieve with regards to you know, the accolades and the captainship within our program. And, you know, he's a guy that, yeah, you really wish he could clone, because not only our program, but, you know, the world would be in a much better place, you know, if we had a lot more Zach Goodriches out there, and I know there are. But, you know, we're very fortunate and excited to have Zach be a part of our program, and he loves Towson, and he's given so much to you know, the Towson Tigers. It's been you know, a real fun process to be a part of.
Seems like a real special person and player for you and your team. Alex mm-hmm. Woodall, another senior captain, in the Face Off yearbook, you said that he transformed his body and himself in the off season. What do you mean by that, and how has he developed as a leader for your team?
Yeah. So, Alex, you know, and he, I gotta hope he wouldn't mind me kind of saying this. So Alex's first year with our program was 2017. You know, the year we went to the Final Four, he had transferred in from High Point, mm-hmm. That year. And then, you know, had a strong year, ended up getting hurt, in the first round NCAA game against Penn State, you know, with a hamstring, but still fought and competed. And I mean, he gave us everything he could, and, you know, that was really impressive to see. But, moving into the 2018 season, you know, even in the 2017 season, you know, he was still an immature young man, you know, and he didn't have all his ducks in a row, and he lacked the confidence, he lacked the structure and ability to really live, you know, in a way that could put him in position to be successful every day. Did he work at school? Absolutely. And did he work at lacrosse? Absolutely. But it wasn't maybe at his best or his fullest in those 2 years. And in 2018, he came back, and he had put on, you know, some unhealthy weight, and that affected him throughout the year, you know, with his inability to be in great shape, his inability to, you know, be as dominant as he's sure capable of being. And I think that continued to wear him down and frustrate him, and he knew it was self-inflicted in a way. But he made a conscious decision. I think it was July. It was when it happened, July of 2018. After, you know, after that season, where he just, you know, he just said enough is enough. I'm done, kind of not giving my best and then not being at my best. He's like, my teammates deserve more. I know I'm capable of more. So he sought out some help from a few alums, that Towson alums that lived near him, down in Annapolis, and they, you know, they did a great job. It was Brian and Matt Vetter, you know, two guys that were similar, you know, in regards to their experience and at Towson and the way they went about their business. And, you know, they're like, hey, you know, if you're serious about this, we're, you know, basically we're going to do this, you know, a certain way, and you know, you're either in or you're out. And Alex was like, I'm all in. And through that process, I mean, I think it was, you know, he changed his diet, he changed his sleeping habits, he changed his daily routine, and, you know, he really established a very healthy lifestyle, one that he has been fully engaged in since. And I mean, just to see him be able to be the young man that he is now, that you knew he could be, but he was just kind of fighting it, you know, with that immaturity and with that, you know, unwillingness to fully engage and to fully be the person he could be, you know, just see him who he is now, and to, you know, be in great shape and to be a leader, which, you know, last year he kind of jokingly said, yeah, I think I can be a captain, but he knew, you know, he knew in his heart you know, in his gut at that point in time, he wasn't living a lifestyle that a captain could be. And now he is. And now he was voted captain from our team. And, you know, the team's seen the transformation in him. You know, the coaches, everybody, you know, he still battles, you know, with some stuff that, you know, he works through on a day-to-day basis. But, you know, he's in a much better place, you know, on how to attack those. And I know just, you know, whether he wins a lot of face-offs for us this year or not, you know, in regards to, you know, how he's transformed himself and his leadership on our team has been terrific.
Yeah, that's great to hear. Mm-hmm. One thing you've established, Towson Lacrosse, sort of an identity or reputation for sound and solid defense. But as you enter the season, the injury to your returning goalie, Shane Brennan, has left some question marks in the back end. As you enter the game against Hopkins, like what are you expecting from goalie play?
Well, we hope the experienced defense in front of them tries to make the job for those guys as easy as possible. You know, we're looking at a couple of inexperienced goalies that will be in there against a high-powered Hopkins offense. So, you know, Shane Brennan was in that situation last year, and it didn't go well for him or us. You know, he kind of struggled in that environment. But, you know, as we got into the season more, he settled down and played well. So, you know, from the goalie position, I think we got two guys that have shown that they're willing and capable to step in and, you know, put their best out there, and we feel comfortable with that, you know, without seeing them in obviously live games and knowing what they really can do and having that experience behind them. It's kind of unknown, but I got confidence in Jake Stout and Tyler Canto to get out there and give everything they can for the team and to do their best of their ability. And we're not asking a lot out of them in regards to, you know, being leaders of the defense or anything like that. It's like we need them to just focus on the ball, focus on saving it, and, you know, being effective in our clear.
One last question before I let you go. Coaching against your alma mater this weekend, is there anything about preparing for your Hopkins week that makes it a little more unique than others?
No. It's been fun, you know, being able to compete against, you know, them every year since I've graduated from there. You know, early on, you know, as a young coach when I was at Princeton and, you know, 02, 03, 04, you know, my first year, you know, my first game ever was coaching against Hopkins at Hopkins. And that was tough, you know, going from having been in that locker room to now being on the opposite sideline for the first game. That was tough. But, you know, over the years, you know, you prepare for them just like, you know, any other opponent. And, you know, the emotions and stuff in regards to, you know, yes, that place, you know, was very special for me, you know, as a player and everything. And, you know, Coach Petromala is a tremendous mentor and a man I hold dear to me for everything that he's done for me and then put me in an opportunity to play college lacrosse and to be able to get into the coaching profession and to be, you know, understand what it really takes to play and coach at a high level. You know, but, you know, when, you know, being able to compete against those guys for, I think it's now 18 years in a row, you know, they end up, you know, not that I'm saying they're just another opponent, but you prepare for them like everybody else. And then, you know, they're going to be a handful, and we got to do our best to get our guys ready to play against them and to play at a high level. So,
well, good luck this weekend for sure, Sean. We appreciate you joining us on the D-Flying Dixie podcast and best of luck to you this season.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me on, guys.
So, Dix, we heard from Coach Natalin, and he had a lot of great things to say about his star defender, one of the best players in the country, certainly at his position, Zach Goodrich.
It's uncanny how Towson, the short stick D middies that they have in the black and gold, Jack Adams and Zach Goodrich formed a 1-2 punch, and now Goodrich has not lost a beat. So, in an era where most of offenses are initiated from dodges, picking on shorties, Zach Goodrich is the best of the bunch. I mean, I put him right up there with Ryan Tarasenko of Ohio State. Hopkins has a really good one, and Danny Jones. What's interesting about the short stick defensive midfield position is watching these guys evolve over their careers. And Zach Goodrich he's really, really good. And not only, like we heard Coach Nadelin say, like even if he didn't play short stick D mid, like, and we're going to see if he stays on the field a little bit longer.
He scores goals.
He does. But now with the new rules and the transition, and you know, he's probably going to take some offensive shifts as well and stay on the field a little bit longer for the Tigers.
Yeah, that'll be a fun one to watch, and that'll be at Johnny United Stadium at noon on Saturday. Boston University, just sitting outside of the top 20 in the Inside Lacrosse weekly poll, preseason poll. Again, at number 16, Ohio State, also at noon on Saturday. Another Big Ten out-of-conference game.
And this game probably will be played in the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, where Ohio State, I believe, has never lost a game. And the Buckeyes coming off of a win over Cleveland State a week ago, 12-9. This is an Ohio State team that said goodbye to Eric Evans, goodbye to Ben Randall, goodbye to Freddie Freibot, three defenders that really defined their program over the last few years. Just big, tough, strong, physical, blue-collar, hardworking. And Ben Randall, first-team All-American in the history of Ohio State. So you still have some pieces there. You still have Matt Borges and Jeff Henrick. You still have Ryan Tarasenko, the short stick D middy, but Josh Kerson, their goaltender, I believe he made 16 saves against Cleveland State, and they need better goaltending out of him, and it looks like he's ready to take that next step to be that guy. Offensively, you know, this is a group. Jack Kaczynski had a great game last weekend. Trey LeClaire can still bring it as well as anybody in the country, but this is a team that needs to find a way to score more goals, and I think that they will this weekend. Then you've got BU. They won their season opener against Providence, 8-7, so an entertaining game against the Friars. And they feature one of the best attackmen in the country in Chris Gray, a guy who was a sensational player as a freshman. He's their leader. He is the guy. So how Ohio State defends him is going to be interesting. But this should be a really good lacrosse game, you know, really, really good game. BU's that fringe program that's been knocking on the door for the last couple of years in the Patriot League, you know, springing some upsets in the conference, but not able to get over that hump, you know, to grab an at-large berth or to grab, a Patriot League tournament championship. So this will be a good game.
Dix, another game featuring a couple teams just outside of our top 20, you know, teams that are receiving votes in our IL weekly poll. The Army Black Knights and the UMass Minutemen. That game's at 1 o'clock on Saturday.
So, you know, Army's a team that last year destroyed UMass 18-6 in the season opener. But then Army's season kind of went south, and UMass ended up winning the Colonial Athletic Association and going to the NCAA tournament and played Yale, the eventual national champion, incredibly tough in New Haven. So I think going into this game, the favorite is probably the Minutemen. You know, but when you look at Army, their best player, in my opinion, is Johnny Sertic, a defenseman. So he's going to be matching up. He's going to be big in this game. That's the interesting thing, though. Season opener for both of these ball clubs. So what do we expect? You know, who are going to be the new guys stepping up for Army? Who are going to be the new guys stepping up for UMass? Jeff Traynor, outstanding midfielder for the Minutemen, had a great season a year ago. And then, you know, you've got arguably two of the best, well, not arguably, but there are two of the best defensive players in the Colonial, in Isaac Paparo, and then Sean Scannone is the goaltender. They're both preseason first-team picks in the Colonial Athletic Association. So both have strong defenses. I think right now UMass probably has the better offense, but it's always – last year's game is a little bit of an outlier in terms of it not being as competitive as it normally is in the past. And it'll be interesting to see if it's – again, when you beat, you know, an Army – crushes a team like UMass 18-6, you're like, okay, Black Knights are for real. And then they struggled, you know, throughout the season. So
I don't expect 18 goals to be scored by either team.
I would doubt that highly.
I bet that's like the over under is 18 goals for the total.
Yeah. So but it should be a good one.
Dix, our final preview of the week is our featured game, number 6 Virginia at number 4 Loyola at noon on Saturday. Don't you just love these marquee matchups early in the season?
I mean, all the games that we've talked about are shaping up to be good games. This will be Loyola and Virginia played each other early season every year since 2014. Four of those five meetings have been won by Virginia, all by one goal. I believe three of them in overtime. The only Loyola win during that regular season was 11-4, maybe 2 years ago. Loyola spanked the Wahoos. But the Greyhounds got the better of them in the first round of the NCAA tournament last year. I believe that was like a two-goal game. So this series is defined by entertaining lacrosse, really close games, and Virginia holds the advantage lately. So this should be a really, really good game against two teams that a lot of people, when you talk about the 8, 9 teams, 10 teams in the country that really have a chance to win a national title, Loyola and Virginia are two of those teams that are in that conversation.
So the Cavaliers have a very potent midfield, headlined by Dox Aiken, Ryan Conrad, Matt Moore.
I don't think any team in the country can boast a trio like that to put on the field at the same time. Hence, I believe they're ranked number one in, you know, midfield cores by the Faceoff Yearbook, Inside Lacrosse Faceoff Yearbook. But no team in the country can put three studs out there at the same time. The Virginia has that luxury this season with those three guys if they run together at the same time.
And a comparable unit in strength, you know, headlined by All-American, All-Everything, Pat Spencer, on the Loyola side, they have a great attack unit. And that will be a key of this game as well.
Well, no doubt. I mean, Pat Spencer is everybody's All-American, and he's a front runner for Player of the Year, you know, and can he break 100 points? He had 94, 95 a year ago. Can he do 100? And he's got two guys that are sophomores now, and Kevin Lindland and Aiden Olmstead, playing next to him. So these are, you know, one of the best attack units in the country versus arguably the best midfield unit in the country right off the bat. That's a storyline.
All right, we're going to talk to Pat Spencer and get his thoughts on the upcoming season and this game against Virginia.
Welcome back to the D-Flying Dixie podcast. We're joined by preseason player of the year, All-Everything Loyola attackman, Patrick Spencer. Patrick, thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Man, it's hard to believe it's already your senior year. It seems like just yesterday that you were bursting on the scene as a freshman phenom. I'm not sure many Patriot League coaches would agree with that the time seems to have flown by, but for fans, it's really been a pleasure to watch you play. So as you get ready to tip off your senior year, what gets you so excited for the 2019 season?
I just think having another year with the guy down on attack under my belt, those guys last year had a really good year, and it's been fun to watch them grow over the last year and develop into what they've been. I think people are going to be surprised at what they're able to do this year. And honestly, it's my last go around as a Greyhound, so that's motivation in itself right there. That's enough motivation.
Sure. So you mentioned your two line mates who started as freshmen, Kevin Lindley and Aiden Olmstead, and they had great seasons as rookies. Usually guys make like a big leap in their sophomore year. So what can fans expect from those two guys this year, and how have they developed in the offseason?
Yeah, they both put on some weight, good weight, you know, got bigger, faster, stronger, I think. And so I think a little bit more confidence is going to be key for them. I think they're both pretty confident coming into the year. I also think we lost a big scorer in Jay Drayton last year.
Sure.
Did a lot for us, ground balls, and obviously scoring goals left and right for us. So I think those guys are going to be able to pick up some of that weight, and I think they're up for the challenge. I think that's the most important part. They both want it, and they're both really up for the challenge. So I'm excited to see what they can do.
Now, your Greyhound team is ranked number 4 in the preseason polls and is considered one of those like 8 to 10 teams that really has a legit shot to win the NCAA title. You mentioned Jay Drapow. How else is this year's team different than last year's?
Well, I think in the most obvious way, we lost our two of our better defenders down there in Foster and Ryder, and then we lost Jared Mintzloff and Brian Begley and Zach Tavliaco. So we did lose a lot on defense, but I think Coach Dwan and Coach Toomey have a system in place down there that is really for the next man up. And I think so far they've been doing a good job of putting the right guys in the right places to make the right plays. And we're going to have some other guys step up. I think we have some guys coming in that people don't know about, and hopefully they'll be willing to rise to the occasion and accept the challenge and but I think that's the most obvious change.
I have to ask you about basketball. So a couple of questions. In my research for this, I saw an article in the Baltimore Sun where you're coaching or helping out coach your brother's team at Boys Latin. So two questions. How much fun has it been to coach your two younger brothers at Boys Latin while they're having one of their best seasons ever? And also, how do you find the time to do that?
Yeah, it's been a blast. You know, we've always been a part of each other's careers that way, whether it's them coming to my game, driving through a blizzard to Colgate, or, you know, always coming to all the home games. And so it's something I wanted to be a part of. I enjoy coaching. I enjoy being around that team, around them. And it's been great for our family. So it's been a blast. They're both doing really well, and hopefully we can keep it up and get back to that championship this year. As far as, what was the second part?
Just how do you find the time for it?
Oh, I've been lucky, I guess. You know, senior year, you get to set up your schedule a little bit more fluidly, I guess. Freshman year, you don't get the choices. So I've kind of scheduled around that, and obviously around our practice. I don't miss practice time for it, but I've been lucky enough to schedule my classes around it.
I think a lot's been said about your own basketball playing career. You were a standout player at BL, and you really enjoy playing as well. Do you plan on playing at Loyola once you finish your lacrosse?
I'm still working on a few things. It's a work in progress right now. You know, the reason I would love to do that would be to play with my brother, but I have some other things working that I'm not
sure
completely sure what I'm going to do yet. But it'd be great to play with my brother. That would be one reason why I would stay if I ever did.
So you mentioned your brother, Cam, you know, who's a senior at BL, who is committed to play at Loyola, and that would be really cool to play a different sport with your brother. I can only imagine how much fun that would be, and I hope that works out for you.
Thank you.
As you enter your senior season, you're probably the most decorated player in Loyola history. Who would you say are some of the more influential, if you can name one or two people, who have really helped you develop during your time as a Greyhound?
Well, I think it starts for sure with Coach Toomey. You know, from day one, he's kind of given me the green light to have my say on offense and kind of lead the offense from, honestly from freshman year. And so he's let me develop into who I can be as a player. And then I think, you know, Coach Day for me, my sophomore year, Loyola has had a lot of coaching changes on the offensive end. Before I was here and since I've been here, we've had the one switch. And so, wasn't something I had prepared for. We had a good freshman year. And so it was definitely something I was trying to figure out and adjust to sophomore year. And I think Coach Bear and I are on the same page. And I think, you know, we have a lot going on together, a lot of good chemistry there. And so him and I have really hit it off this last year and a half or so. And, so hopefully we can continue that to championship weekend.
So this weekend, you guys kick off the season. Big game, number 4 Loyola versus number 6 Virginia. You guys have played some great games over the last few years, especially last year. They got you early in double overtime in the regular season, and then you guys able to avenge that loss with a 2-goal win in the NCAA tournament. What are you expecting this Saturday?
Yeah, I think we're expecting some big guys in the midfield, and obviously they have some horses up there and very high-powered offense, and so I think that's probably why fans have enjoyed the game the last couple of years, I think it's a really up-tempo game, and the offense is pretty high-powered, and so I think it's been fun to watch. But we're definitely looking forward to it. I think they got a lot of talent down there on the offensive end. Obviously, they graduated a guy in Scott Hooper on defense, and then I think they had another member step away, and so they have some new pieces down there on defense, but we still have obviously a scout in there and have a game plan for those guys. And so I think, you know, overall we're looking forward to getting after it in the middle of the field, hopefully getting the majority of the ground balls and keeping the ball on our end of the field. And then obviously Coach Timmy and Coach Duan will put in a great game plan, and Coach Bam will have it prepared.
Well, we're all looking forward to this weekend for sure. And Patrick Spencer, thank you for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast, and best of your luck to you this Saturday and throughout the 2019 season.
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys.
So, Dix, you heard from Pat Spencer fantastic player and a very good athlete. And in talking about his time that has seemed to fly by at Loyola.
That's what I was thinking right away. It was like, you know, where is the time gone? This guy was, I don't want to say he was an unknown, but he wasn't one of the more highly touted players coming in his freshman year. And then he's just...
He burst onto the scene.
He really did. He really did. So much to the point where people feel like he should have been a first-team All-American as a freshman. Then we'd be looking at, you know, the first four-time first-team All-American since Mikey Powell. So he's a special player. Again, this will be a great game. You know, midfield-wise for Loyola, John Duffy, Alex McGovern are the headliners. Question mark for me, the durability of Bailey Salvio, the face-off man for Loyola. He is the only face-off man on the roster.
Listed as a face-off.
Right. I think he is the only experienced true face-off guy on the roster for Loyola. I was talking to somebody associated with the Loyola program recently. So that's a concern for them in terms of just the wear and tear that you get for for a lacrosse player. A face-off guy, I should say. Justin Swank is the guy for Virginia. Jacob Stover, the goaltender for Loyola, seems like he's been there forever. But you know, him and Spencer are two of the main names still left over from the national semifinalists from 2016. So this will be a really, really entertaining game.
All right, Dix. I'm very excited for this weekend, but I'm also excited for our next little segment called The Give and Go. If you haven't,
we're still doing the give and go.
We're doing the give and go. It's a fan favorite. So this is how it works. Dixie, if you don't know him personally, he's one of the funniest guys I know, and he's very quick on his feet. I mean, you should hear the way he just makes up stuff on this podcast. But one of the things so I give a topic that he does not really know about, and then I kind of put him on the spot. I tell him what I think, and then he gets a chance to think about it, and then gives me his answer. So our topic today is, I want to get power rankings for the 10 Division I men's lacrosse conferences. I'll give you my assessment.
Power, okay. So ranking the 10 conferences from 1 to 10?
Yeah, or I'm going to start at 10 and work my way back to what I think is the best. And then you can give yours, and you can drop in your analysis, or we can debate as we go through it. So I'm going to start number 10 on the power ranking is the MAC conference.
Okay.
Then I'll go with the Southern, and it's a little, it's a little tough ranking some of these conferences because,
it's preseason.
They have some, but there's some top tier teams in some of them, and right. You know, they're top heavy, but some of the bottom of these conferences is a little weak and don't expect, NCAA tournament bursts for some of these teams. But MAC and Southern, then I'll go NEC, Northeast Conference, America East. I think they're going to take a dip this year, even though Albany and Vermont look to be around the top 20 type teams, but the bottom of that league is weaker than some of the others. The CAA, and I'll go to the Big East. I think Denver is going to have a big year, and they kind of pull that league up a little bit in my mind. Georgetown's also coming off of an NCAA tournament berth. Marquette should be much better this year. The Patriot League, which we've talked about a lot on this podcast so far, with Boston University, Lehigh. I think is going to have a really strong season and challenge, give Loyola a good run. And then, of course, the Loyola Greyhounds. The Ivy League, our number one team is Yale. Cornell, very highly thought of, somewhere in the top 10, sometimes as high as 4 or 5 in some polls. The ACC, and then I'm going to say the Big Ten is the number one conference in America going into this season. We'll see how it plays out.
All right. I mean, just listening to you kind of rip through all this, I don't think I have a whole lot of difference in
opinion.
Do you
agree? Disagree?
So 10th, you had the MAC, right?
Yeah, correct.
All right, let me take a look at the MAC here. Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. So you had MAC, and then you had SoCon.
Yeah.
I think the SoCon might be a nudge ahead of the Northeast, and you had Northeast at 8, right?
I had the Northeast at 8.
I mean, the SoCon.
Am I giving Robert Morris and Brian a little too much credit in terms of pulling that league up a little bit?
No, I mean the thing to note here is, and what this is what I love about college lacrosse, and I know it's been a I know it's been kind of a lightning rod of controversy is the automatic qualifiers, you know.
I love it.
I do, I too. But, you know, when you have, you know, Ohio State, Rutgers, you know, who else were the just misses last year in the NCAA tournament? Trying to remember back. I just remember Ohio State and Rutgers were the two biggest that people argued about not making into the NCAA tournament. Look, you know, the SoCon in particular, the facilities at High Point, Richmond, and now, you know, Jacksonville has a new facility. They're really nice. And the reason that they're making that investment is because every year these guys have an opportunity to go to the NCAA tournament. And that's because of the automatic qualifiers. That's what
one of the reasons why we're seeing Division I schools add men's lacrosse.
Right. So that the AQ is a you know, all this development of programs is a byproduct of the automatic qualifier. So, yeah, I mean, you know, a MAC team has never won an NCAA tournament game. You know, the Southern Conference, are they better than – is the champion of the SoCon or the champion of the NEC better than the fourth-best team in the – or fifth-best team in the Big Ten or the, you know, fifth team or fourth team in the ACC? No.
I haven't
not.
Seen that yet, no.
But that's what they're striving for. That's what they're developing for. So with that being said, I would put – I'd go MAC, then the Northeast Conference. I'm telling you, man, the SoCon is no joke. Like, they're really
– I like watching the SoCon.
They're ramping it up these days. But I still would put the SoCon there. So that's at number – so I got 10, 9, 8, 7. Your 7 was America East?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a conference – I like the America East. That's you know, it's blue collar. It's tough, but I do think that they take a little bit of a step back. Albany's pissed. You know, they I don't think they like the way that the people were talking about them in the preseason rankings. And then, you know, the ESPN lacrosse schedule was recently announced, the television schedule, and Albany's not on it. And the people in the Dane Train are not happy about it. So they're playing with a tremendous chip on their shoulder, and they still have pieces
more so than usual.
Big, I think so. I think that there were less smiles in the headshots this year with the haircuts and the mustaches and the beards and the big Albany pendants than in years past. But that's a team that's playing with a lot of, you know, they're not happy, you know, with the way that they feel like they've been slighted a little bit coming off of their first ever championship weekend appearance. Okay, so I got 10. I got 10, 9, 8, 7. What 6 am I still looking at here?
I think it's between the CAA and the Big East.
CAA and the Big East. So you mentioned Denver, but, you know, look, Georgetown won the Big East last year. Then the previous 2 years, it was Marquette, right? So Denver has not won the Big East Tournament Championship in 3 years. They're still considered to be the hallmark team of that conference, and for good reason, but Georgetown, Marquette has upset the apple cart. Villanova made the tournament last year. So I think I would probably go CAA. That's the you know, the Northern Division, or it used to be called, you know, that's the Packers and the Bears and the Lions and the Vikings, you know.
Monsters of the Midway.
Yeah, just NFC, you know. really a defensive-minded conference. Tough, tough teams. Love the personalities of each of these teams. But I would then put the CAA at 6. I'd give the Big East a slight nod at 5.
That's the way I had it.
Yeah, and then your top 4 are then, what am I, Patriot. And, that man, that's a 9-team conference where 6 teams make the tournament. So that's a healthy number, healthy conference numbers wise, very, very competitive. I agree with you. Lehigh is going to turn some heads this year. Loyola is the favorite there, but you know, those are some drag down, knock 'em out lacrosse games. Wow. And then you're looking at the Ivy, the ACC and the Big Ten. And a lot of people will tell you that the ACC is down, quote unquote. I don't know if I necessarily agree. I think people say the ACC is down because Syracuse. People are not expecting a whole lot out of Syracuse this year. And that remains to be seen whether or not that's accurate. North Carolina is also, after watching them in the preseason and hearing people's opinions, and then they got the big win over Mercer last week, people are saying that the Tar Heels are down. So I think that, you know, and then Notre Dame losing Ryder Garnsey. Huge loss for those guys. You know, and then you're looking at the Ivy League, the defending national champion, Yale Bulldogs, and then you've got Cornell coming right up. Princeton, but I think the Ivy might have a little bit of a bigger drop off between the number two team to the number three team than the ACC does. So for that reason, I'll put the Ivy at number three. And that's a Princeton team that could surprise some people this year. Everybody knows about Michael Sowers, but you know they've got some young talent there, and they're hungry. You know, that's a very proud program that is looking to get back into that upper echelon of discussion. So I'll go Ivy three, I'll go ACC two, and then I'll take the Big Ten one, just because, you know, Maryland and Hopkins, there's been four Big Ten tournaments so far. Maryland and Hopkins have two apiece. This is the year, I think, that a Penn State could win the Big Ten championship. And then also, Michigan is a team that is not an afterthought anymore, meaning they could absolutely make the Big Ten tournament. And they've never made it in the first 4 years. Every team except Michigan has made that four-team tournament. I think for that reason, like, I think their 1-6 is just... Yeah, but again, that's hard. That's really hard. I mean, it's like put Big Ten 1A and ACC 1B.
Yeah, there's no weekends off in either of those leagues, especially if you have to go on the road. I mean, every game is a...
And again, saying Syracuse is down...
Yeah, is...
Like, they're still a top 20 team.
Oh, yeah. All those teams in the ACC...
North Carolina is down. They're still a top 15, top 20 team.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's all relative. I think we get caught up a little bit too much in the semantics of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, the three best conferences are Big Ten, ACC, and the Ivy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we'll see this all play out on the field this year, and that's what's great about the season and why we're so excited for 2019. All right, Dix, that wraps up our first one here. Great job on the week.
Seemed to go fast.
Yeah, well, we have a lot to talk about.
Not as much frivolity in this one. No, I feel like I didn't deliver, you know, what our fans want, but we'll see.
We'll see.
We are the most listened to podcast on Inside Lacrosse. No, I'm serious. From like a numbers perspective, aren't we?
Not sure about that.
Oh, really?
I don't know that we are not. But
so there's like no clear number one?
No, but we are T.D. Erland's favorite podcast, for sure.
And that is huge.
Yeah.
That is huge.
If you like what you heard, please subscribe, leave a rating on iTunes or whatever platform you listen on, and share it with a friend. If you made it this far, we know you'll like it. You can reach out to us on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse and at @D_Fly, FLY. Or via email, you can hit me at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Also, you can call in with your rant, comments, or questions at 443-595-7020. That's right. Call in and leave us a voicemail at that number, 443-595-7020. Be sure to leave your name and where you're calling from. Also, don't forget to check out the other podcasts here at Inside Lacrosse. We drop a new one every weekday during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the game.